In Washington, D.C., I'm Rob Sachs, and on today's panel, we're going to discuss extradition laws. This issue has been in the news since WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange remains holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy in London in fear of being extradited to the United States. Here in our D.C. studios, we'd like to invite Bruce Tagaris. He's a partner at Berliner, Corcoran & Rowe in Washington, D.C. He has been working on extradition law for years. And Brendan, who do you have with you in London?
And this here in London, we have Fadi Daoud. I'd like to welcome. He's an extradition lawyer with the London firm Lawrence & Company. He's also collaborated on a book called Extradition and Mutual Legal Assistance. This week, it was announced, of course, that the British authorities will not extradite the hacker Gary McKinnon. He's wanted on suspicion of accessing secret NASA and Pentagon systems. They cited his failing health as the reason. In Moscow, we're joined by Sergei Balyaev, who's an associate professor of international law at the International Law Institute in Moscow. But I'd like to start with my guest here, Fadi. Your first reaction to the news that the Home Secretary, Theresa May, has basically said that, no, he cannot be extradited because of his health, mental health issues.
Although I'm not going to say that it's the first time, certainly, that this has happened, because certainly at the lower courts, we have had findings like this that people should not be extradited as a result of their health. I can't think of anything recently other than the case that we were involved in fact, a couple of months ago, where such findings were made. But it is not unheard of. I think in Mr. McKinnon's case, though, it's particularly extraordinary because it is America who is requesting him.
So it seems unusual that the Conservative Party would invoke the Human Rights Act. So it's a kind of a piece of legislation that they've never been fans of. This seems like a political move. It's certainly been criticised as such, hasn't it?
My feeling is I don't think it is. It's being politicised, but I think for the particular individual, I don't think it is a political move. I think Ms. May has given her reasons. The reasons probably were not as clear to somebody like me as a lawyer, because I think the one thing that perhaps has not been discussed and stated is that Mr. McKinnon can be prosecuted both here and in America. The question is, why is it that we've not prosecuted him here? Although the human rights has been sort of the thing that's been banged down about mostly, there is an additional side to this, to Mr. McKinnon's case, and that is that he can actually be prosecuted here in the UK, although there's been a decision previously made that there was insufficient evidence.
But indeed, the evidence hasn't actually changed. I mean, in the sense that this case has been rumbling on for quite a few years. Alan Johnson, the previous Home Secretary, wanted him to be extradited and said that he was facing very serious charges in the US. I mean, nothing has actually changed in terms of the evidence, because psychiatric experts had always said all along that he may be suicidal if he'd ever got to the United States to face these charges.
The indication is that I think his health has deteriorated over time. And so that perhaps has helped focus the Secretary of State's decision-making process. But his case has also been delayed for a long, long time. And it has been going, before her for quite some time. So, and there's been additional information that's been sent to the Secretary of State. But that's what I'm saying. I think although it has been talked about as though it is a problem with his health, I think the added dimension is the fact that he potentially can be prosecuted here. And I think that allows then Theresa May to say, look, we're going to consider a prosecution against him here. There may not be additional evidence, but perhaps the admissions he's been making over the years. I mean, this is very difficult, because if there is a pending prosecution, I wouldn't be in a position to really discuss it or talk about it. But looking at it historically, there may be a way of reopening the prosecution, or considering an actual prosecution. And indeed, it has been reported today. I'll just finish the point very, very quickly. That potentially Keir Starmer, the DPP, the Director of Public Prosecution, is considering the position.
Indeed. So a lot to be concerned with. I'll turn over to Rob in Washington there.
Well, I want to get Bruce Tagaris to weigh in on this case. What do you make of it? We just heard a few interesting things from Fadi Daoud out in London talking about that he could be prosecuted there in London. Why hasn't we seen a prosecution of Gary McKinnon yet, either here or in London?
Well, we haven't seen a prosecution of him in the United States because they don't have custody of
right.
him. And an interesting question in the future will be, will the U.S. now withdraw the Interpol red notice? Because otherwise, of course, Mr. McKinnon will not be able to travel.
Thinking about how in the past some other countries have been reluctant to send people over to the United States for prosecution, what are some of the reasons they've given, and have you found any of them to be at all legitimate?
Well, since 9/11, the United States has had some difficulty in obtaining custody of individuals that have been charged with terrorism offenses. And one of the problems has been that countries that are concerned with human rights are worried that some people may be transferred from Article 3, that is, civilian courts, to Guantanamo. Another problem has been that the sentences in the U.S. are so disproportionately longer than those in most other countries that some courts also worry about the disproportionate sentences in the U.S.
And Fadi Daoud, is that the case here, that U.K. courts are concerned that Gary McKinnon would be faced with a prison sentence that would be much longer, much harsher than he would if he were tried in the U.K.?
They have been concerned about this in the past, not perhaps with Gary McKinnon's case in particular, but it has been a consideration in the past. Just to add to that as well, that the list of being transferred to Guantanamo or longer sentences, there is also another concern, and that's where prisoners are being housed, in the sense of whether or not supermax prisons are going to be used in the US as well. So that these are issues that have been adjudicated on previously. And just going back to that point about longer sentences, it has been considered, but really, the High Court here has simply said, that's fine, but that's the process in that particular country. That's the process in the US. They attract longer sentences, and so be it. And on a day-to-day basis, my experience is, for example, if one compares and contrasts, although America is a different procedure, but for example, in Poland, there are certain offences that one would go into prison for perhaps a year, year and a half, 2 years, where here we would be dealing with them for a week, a month, or a few months at the very, very most. So we have to deal with that all the time. But I'm afraid the courts here just say, well, that's the other jurisdiction. That's what they consider are the sentences.
I'd just like to, in a minute, I'll bring in our guest in Moscow, Sergei Balyeev, but I'd just like to follow up on that question with you, Fadi Daoud. There has been criticism that there's been a kind of double standard here, and that only a couple of weeks ago, Bama Ahmed and Saeed Talat Asan, who also suffers from Asperger's syndrome, by the way, were extradited to the US on terror charges despite being detained without trial for more than 5 years. Now, what do you make of the criticisms that they didn't face the same kind of decision by the Home Secretary as Gary McKinnon?
This is the problem, that it's not a judge who's making that decision, it's the Home Secretary who's making a decision. Now, the judges have been consistent in their decisions to say that Gary McKinnon should be extradited, that in fact the others who you've mentioned should also be extradited. But then it's the Home Secretary to make that final decision as to whether or not the person is to be extradited. And I'm afraid that's a question that you'll have to pose to Ms. May. As a lawyer, I see very little difference when people suffer from the same problems and the same difficulties. Of course, it all depends on degrees, and these are very individual factual cases, so you can't really set one as a precedent against the other. But there must be an element of questioning as to what's so special about Mr. McKinnon.
And as our guest in Washington, Bruce Zagaras, was saying, the disproportionate sentences in the U.S. Are also a factor in terms of concerns of extradition, I guess, in that he would have been, Gary McKinnon in that particular case, would have been sentenced to 60 years. If he'd faced trial in the U.K., obviously it would be probably a lot less if he were to be found guilty. So does this suggest that the U.K., which is the staunchest ally of the United States, one would argue, has lost faith or doesn't have faith anymore in the American judicial system?
I mean, I can't speak on behalf of the government, and I have no association at all with this government or any other before.
But do you think it reflects? Does it reflect a kind of skepticism as to somebody facing proper justice in the United States, whether it be political or not?
I think questions are asked. I would concede that there would be a question of why, but I really do think it's specific on this particular case. I mean, it's a very brave decision by Miss May, but I really think it turns on this particular, because it's not the judges who are making this decision. It is the Secretary of State who's made this particular decision. The judge has been very consistent in their application of the Extradition Act across the board. I mean, a few blips here and there, but generally they've applied it in the way that Parliament wanted to apply it, which is post 9/11. Those who are being extradited must and should be extradited, unless, and that's always been the presumption that's been set up when considering extradition.
I'll turn to our guest in Moscow, Sergey Belyaev, who's the Associate Professor of International Law at the International Law Institute. There's another big case that we've seen in recent weeks, extradition case, I mean, and that is the case surrounding Victor Boot, which is caused headlines all around the world. Can you just remind our listeners how exactly he was extradited in the end?
Thank you very much for the possibility to talk. If you allow, I would say a couple of words about the first case, the case of Hacker McKinnon as a former law officer of the European Court of Human Rights. This case reminds me so-called Sarin case, when a German national was prohibited from extradition to the United States based on his alleged risks to be sentenced to death penalty. It was a case which was a classical case law, which is typical for this court. And I would say that this case law was developed later, and among other reasons, state of health was reason to prohibit an extradition to a country. For example, if this country cannot provide sufficient medical aid, for example, because of fragile health or different type of illnesses which are not treated in these countries. If we speak about the case of Boot, I can tell that Russian perception of this case are multifold. First of all, it's the case of extradition of Boot from Thailand to the United States, which was considered like to be realized, fulfilled under political pressure from the U.S. authorities. Secondly, now we are speaking about sentence, which is considered to be sentence which entered into force, and now it's a question of appeal or not, depending on the wish of Mr. Bush to be transferred to the Russian Federation, eventually transferred to the Russian Federation as a person who is able to serve the sentence in the Russian Federation. Just to remind that there is a treaty between the United States and the Russian Federation on transfer of the sentenced persons, which is valid from 83. From this point of view, it's another system, but I would not speak here about extradition. I would speak here about transfer of a sentenced person.
Well, to follow up on that, this idea of transfer of a sentenced person, Bruce Zagaras here in D.C., how does that differ from an extradition treaty, and why do the United States and the Russian Federation not have an agreement like the U.S. and the U.K. have?
Okay, well, first, it is true that the U.S. and Russia do not have an extradition treaty. There have been many discussions recently about having an extradition treaty. The U.S. has taken the position that because of problems with due process in human rights in Russia, the U.S. hasn't wanted to have an extradition treaty. However, there is informal surrender between the two countries on selected cases. With respect to how transfer a prisoner works in the United States, when a person wants to transfer, they make an application through the Department of Justice, and all of the prosecutors and the law enforcement authorities who participated in the prosecution are able to object or approve the application. I think it might not be so easy in the case of Mr. Boot for Mr. Boot to have his application approved because the U.S. Department of Justice approves less than 50% of all applications, and they especially do not approve certain what they call sensitive cases.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to our weekly international panel where Washington connects with London and Moscow. We're going to continue this discussion after the headlines.